Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on the Bettors Box. This is BettingTheBook.com's MLB betting podcast for April 27th, presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI Sportsbook, use the promo code B2BRadio. It's good for a $10 free bet just for signing up, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Glad to be with you here for this Thursday edition of the show. Got plenty of stuff coming your way. Go beyond the box score, down the lines. I'm going to isolate some pitchers to back and some pitchers to fade based on some of the early returns here in the Major League Baseball season, and then look at the weekend ahead and some of the series that have caught my attention. Before I do that, just want to remind you of a few things. Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format of Bang the Book Radio. Mondays, the Bettors Box, and also the Monday Mailbag. If you've got Monday Mailbag questions, please shoot them over to me at any time. You can hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods. That's the best way to get in touch with me. Tuesday, our Tuesday Takeover show. Haven't talked to him yet. Haven't nailed down a time. However, I have spoken with Keeneland Dan about coming back on the show prior to the Kentucky Derby. So hopefully that will be our Tuesday Takeover segment. If not, I'll do everything I can to get that on the show here, whether we do it Monday, whether we do it Wednesday, something like that, just to make sure we've got that presence for the ponies coming up at Churchill Downs, not this weekend, but the following weekend. And then, as you know, Thursdays, like today, another edition of the Bettors Box. Over at BangTheBook.com, tons of stuff going on, lots of phenomenal content. We've got some NFL draft stuff. If you haven't listened to Tuesday's Tuesday Takeover show with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible, we went over some of the NFL draft props that are out there if you want to look for some extra added incentive for tonight's festivities, and then, of course, tomorrow and Saturday as well. The contest going on over at BangTheBook.com, our daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, and then some cash prizes for the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, return on investment, also number of units won. All you have to do is sign up, no purchase necessary, to win some cash prizes in those over there at BangTheBook.com. My picks and analysis piece goes up every day. You get those push notifications if you've subscribed to that at the website. Also, my daily fantasy piece. Got some good NBA and MLB stuff from Alan Moody and also from Zabo Jones going on over there. I've got NHL series previews up. Of course, some of the series, the two in the Western Conference already started. The two in the Eastern Conference get underway tonight. I've got my preview of Game 1 for the Penguins and the Capitals. Must-watch TV there in that series. So hopefully everyone, whether you're a hockey fan or not, you get a chance to tune into that and see the game at its absolute peak. All right, let's go ahead and get into the meat and potatoes of today's edition of the Bettors Box. We'll go ahead and start beyond the box score. This series isn't finished yet. One more game to go tonight between the Astros and the Indians, but I've thoroughly enjoyed watching this series. I made a tweet about this last night that I really do hope that this is an ALCS preview. It would take years off of my life as an Indians fan, but for as far as I'm concerned, these are the two best teams in the American League. You've got the two best bullpens in the American League with the Indians and the Astros. Two really great lineups, two solid rotations. Maybe the Indians' rotation a little bit deeper right now. But, you know, Houston, of course, could be very aggressive here throughout the season in terms of bolstering their rotation. We'll see if the things that we've seen from Charlie Morton are legit. We'll see if Colin McHugh can get back and be a solid contributor here to this rotation. But, you know, through the first two games, seen a lot of good stuff from Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers. Now, the Indians had a really good opposite field approach against Lance McCullers, and this is something that maybe we start to see teams do. Maybe we start to see teams make this adjustment. When you're talking about a guy with premium velocity that throws that hammer-knuckle curve about 55% of the time, you need to go the opposite field. You're probably not going to be able to pull that curveball too much and do damage with it, so you wait back, you let it get deep into the zone, you hit it to the opposite field. Of course, if you can take premium velocity, oppo, that's a good strategy to utilize. So the Indians did that really well, and I think what it really speaks to is the contact ability of this Indians team. You know, they were hitting the ball with authority to the opposite field. Couple doubles off Josh Reddick's glove in center field. They were really putting some good swings on McCullers, and this is what they can do. If you look at the Indians, and I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, they had the highest BABIP against and the lowest BABIP for in the highest leverage situations with runners in scoring position. So this is an Indians team that, you know, we haven't seen its potential yet, and you watch the game plan there against McCullers at the outset of that game. And credit to McCullers. McCullers made some adjustments, pitched really well in the middle innings of that game to give his team a chance to come back and win. And, of course, Houston did make it interesting. They cut the deficit to one run three separate times in that game. But I think that that's the beauty of this series, the beauty of baseball, is watching teams make adjustments, watching teams play to their skill sets. Both of those teams have done this here so far in this series. Also, Dallas Keuchel, really, really good in the first game of this series. Complete game, gave up the home run to Michael Brantley in the ninth, but only gave up two runs there. Keuchel looked strong, and if he's back to his form, maybe not necessarily the Cy Young form of 2015, but if he's back to being a good front-of-the-rotation guy, you know, the Astros have a very, very high ceiling this season. And when you look around the American League West, just a lot of mediocrity right now, and then the Astros that stand way above everybody. So great stuff in this series. We'll see what the finale looks like tonight. Corey Kluber's heavy chalk against Mike Fiers. I wrote about that one in my picks analysis piece a little bit. But for me, these are the two best teams in the American League, and I think it's pretty clear at this point. I know Boston's off to a decent start. Baltimore's off to a very good start. But all goes according to plan, and of course, the Major League Baseball playoffs are nothing but randomness. These are the two teams that should be there for the right to go to the World Series. Moving on from that one, we'll go to the National League Central here, where the Milwaukee Brewers swept the Cincinnati Reds. 29 runs of offense in this series for the Brewers. Cincinnati only had 12. Look, everybody wants to talk about Eric Thames, and they should be. I mean, Eric Thames is a guy that I talked about on the Stealing Signs podcast with my good buddy Stevie at the Handicaper on Twitter. That should get posted here today. Thames just isn't chasing bad pitches, and he's hitting pitches in the middle of the plate. And he's doing damage on them. You know, people are going the PED route, which is complete bullshit with him. He's just built like a brick shit house, and this is a guy that, you know, was big before he went over to Korea. And I do wonder, this is something I speculated a little bit about on that podcast that I recorded yesterday, is that, you know, maybe being in Korea sort of forced Thames to pay a little bit more attention to arm slots, release points, pitch recognition, you know, picking up on things like that, because a lot of those Asian pitchers have quirky deliveries. There's deception there. They hide the ball really well. So maybe Thames, maybe that stint over there in the Korean baseball organization just helped him out a lot to the point where he's, you know, picking up pitches quickly. As I said, he's not chasing. His chase rate, I think it's about 17% the last I looked. So he's swinging at strikes. When you swing at strikes, you do damage. You know, and it's not just enough to be able to make contact with pitches off the plate, because when you do that, you're still making a lot of weak contact. You really want to lay off of those if you can. Thames has done that so far. He's been a tremendous story. But the other guys for the Brewers that aren't getting a whole lot of attention, how about Ryan Braun? Ryan Braun right now, 289, 379, 592 slash line. That's batting average, on-base percentage, slugging percentage. Travis Shaw's got a 275 average with a 570 slugging percentage. Hernan Perez, really, really good utility guy for them. Almost kind of like a poor man's Ben Zobrist in a way. He can play a lot of positions and do so relatively efficiently. He's not as good defensively as Zobrist is, but he's a pretty good offensive player. And that's a really impressive skill set to have, to be able to play a lot of positions and still not give anything away offensively. You know, a lot of guys that play a lot of positions aren't very good offensively. We'll talk about the Marwin Gonzalez type players of the world, Andrew Romines, stuff like that. They're guys that are versatile, but not very good offensively. Perez has been very good offensively for this Brewers team. So this is a lineup with a lot of depth, and they're not getting anything from Jonathan Villar and Keon Broxton just yet. Villar, a guy that stole 60 bases last year, also saw the power increase. He's been pretty poor across the board. Broxton's been striking out a ton. He hasn't really been able to show off that power and speed combination. This is a scary Brewers team right now offensively. There's a lot to like about this group. And then you look at the starting pitching here in this series against the Reds, not too shabby. Matt Garza wasn't great, but at least he was somewhat useful. Zach Davies looked better, five shutout innings, scattered six hits, struck out six. Willie Peralta made four mistakes. He gave up four solo home runs, but the velocity looked good. The stuff looked fairly crisp. I talked about this coming into the year. I really liked the Milwaukee Brewers. We talked about a position on their season win total in the write-ups that I had. So far, so good. And it looks like there's a lot of sustainability to this offense because they have so many guys contributing and because they have some guys with some ceilings that aren't contributing yet. Now let's look at this from the other side here with the Cincinnati Reds. The starting pitching for the Reds is a big-time concern right now. You know, they did well to get Amir Garrett through the league a couple of times, but he faced an all right-handed lineup here, gave up 10 runs on 8 hits and 3 and a third, walked 4, 3 dingers. How will he respond in his next start? You know, it's all fun and games when you're on top of the world as a young pitcher. But when you get shelled, when you get your brains beaten in the way that Garrett did in that start, how do you bounce back? You know, do you overanalyze? Do you tweak a little bit too much? I kind of wonder here because Garrett is a guy that's relatively young to the pitching side of things. You know, he's been a multi-sport athlete throughout his career, a basketball player at St. John's, but pitching is a relatively new thing to him. So, you know, what happens here at this point when you've got a situation where you just got blown up after you've started really well to your major league career? I want to see what his bounce back ability looks like because we haven't seen a whole lot of bounce back ability from other guys here in this Reds rotation. Rookie Davis comes off the DL. He gets rocked yesterday. Scott Feldman, very lucky to only give up 4 runs. He walked 5, gave up 5 hits in 5 innings. He's a guy that, you know, I think the shine is coming off of him, as I talked about a little bit in my picks analysis piece. Some of the bullpen guys are having issues. Robert Stevenson doesn't look very good. Michael Lorenzen struggling a little bit here. And the Reds offense, very, very power-driven right now. Lots of guys with slugging percentages 500 or higher. Joey Votto's hit for power. Scott Schebler's hit for power. Eugenio Suarez is hit for power. Adam Duvall is a power guy. You know, what happens when some of that power regresses a little bit? There are some guys with some very high home run to fly ball rates in this Reds offense. They look like a fade team to me right now. You know, no Anthony DeSclafani, no Homer Bailey. They're out indefinitely. So this rotation looks pretty weak at this point. Lots of concerns for Cincinnati. They got off to a good start. It was a good story. Built themselves up a little bit of a cushion for those that decided to play the Reds season win total over. But they've got some big-time concerns now going forward, and a lot of it stems from the starting pitching. We'll stay in the National League Central here and go beyond the box score for this series with the Cubs and the Pirates. The Cubs took 2 out of 3. Their defense was really on display in the first 2 games of this series because Brent Anderson walked 6 and 6 innings, only gave up 1 earned run, 3 runs total, so there were some errors behind him in that game. But things could have been a lot worse for Brent Anderson. And then Kyle Hendricks, 6 scoreless in the second game of this series, only 3 strikeouts, though. Velocity still not there, still concerns with Kyle Hendricks. John Lester, not very good in the series finale, gave up 10 hits and 5 2/3, 6 runs, 5 earned. The big thing for me coming out of this series, though, is that, you know, the Cubs have such a big margin for error because offensively they are tremendous. Defensively, they are very good. And that's what I was talking about a little bit on Monday is that, you know, I do have some worries about their starting staff. You know, I talked about that extensively on Monday's show with the red flags that are there with Hendricks, John Lackey, of course, getting older, Brett Anderson, you know, who knows what he's going to end up being, Jake Arrieta with the velocity drop there. But they've got such a margin for error because they can just go out there and hang crooked numbers whenever they want. Defensively, they're very good. So I think the Cubs are going to be fine. You know, the Central Division, not very good right now. The Cardinals are not playing good baseball. The Pirates are a fade team to me. The offense is a mess. Gerrit Cole's looked pretty good here of late, but the starting staff, a little bit rocky for them right now as well. We'll see what Jameson Taillon's able to do against Miami tomorrow night, I believe that game is. But, you know, the Pirates just don't look very good. The Brewers, offensively, they're great. Their pitching staff's still a work in progress. I just talked about the Reds. So the Cubs, with that margin for error, team that's going to have a lot of success. But again, on a game-by-game standpoint, with the starting pitching that they're getting right now, I'd be very wary of backing the Cubs in a lot of these situations here where they're going to be laying some big price tags, especially at home and especially when they play some of these inconsistent teams within the division. So, again, just a word of caution, just a follow-up there with the Cubs on some of the worries that I have about them. All right, let's go down the lines here, look at some line moves that have happened since we were last on the air. The Tigers' fade has continued throughout the week. That's a theme I'll talk about here as we go day by day. We saw money come in on Martin Perez and the Rangers against Phil Hughes and the Twins. That move did not work on Monday. If the market's backing Martin Perez, it better work out because there's not a whole lot of faith in him in the business community and with him not pitching all that well in that game. And Phillip Hughes, you know, really pitching well at Arlington, which was a big surprise. We'll see how long it takes the market to come back on Martin Perez. Saw Fate of Zach Greinke on Monday, and Zach Greinke has been phenomenal. I'll talk about that a little bit more here in the show, but I don't think you're going to make a lot of money going against Zach Greinke here throughout the season. On Tuesday, a big Tigers fade against Felix Hernandez. About a 30-cent move on that one. That was a 19-9 Tigers win. Jordan Zimmermann pitched in that game. He did not pitch well at all. Felix leaves that start hurt. He's back in Seattle for evaluation. Won't pitch against Cleveland this weekend. You know, hey, I mean, this is not a big surprise with Felix Hernandez, a guy that I talked about, crossed that 2,000-inning threshold. Velocity's gone down. Still has the ability to induce a lot of weak contact, but you know, these leg injuries, these back injuries, they're becoming a more frequent thing here for him. It's tough to watch. It really is, because this is a guy in his prime who was just best starting pitchers we've seen in this generation. Now he's a shell of his former self, and hopefully this injury isn't a big deal. I really like the Cardinals on Tuesday night. Michael Wacha was going up against Marco Estrada. It was a bad situational spot for the Blue Jays. They were coming in after playing a four-game wraparound series in Anaheim. Late start on Monday night. Got into St. Louis very, very early in the morning. But they persevered, picked up the win, but I totally agreed with the move on Wacha. Michael Wacha's pitched really, really well. It wouldn't surprise me to see him getting steam as we continue to move along here throughout the season. Tuesday, there were three rainouts. So some of the pitching changes, some of the rainouts altering this week's line action a little bit. Make sure you consider that if you are tracking the numbers. Again, you want to look at how things are going from open to close. Want to be on the right side of as many line moves as possible. And also have your numbers as close to the close as possible. So just for tracking purposes, keep that in mind, where rainouts can really skew some things. Also, we've had some starting pitching changes. And again, this will be something I think that happens frequently throughout the season because the 15-day disabled list now down to 10 days. If you got some off days in there, you can only miss one start with some pitchers. Teams are probably going to manipulate that 10-day disabled list rule a little bit. And that may alter some of the lines and some of the tracking that we get here throughout the season. Had a situation like that actually between the Mets and the Braves on Wednesday night, where it was announced that Noah Syndergaard was going to go. Then he didn't go. Robert Selman pitched, and he was not good at all. In fact, velocity dropped throughout the game. I'll talk about that here in a few minutes as well. But that was one of those games where it looks like the opener for the Mets is minus 200 because that was Noah Syndergaard. But the closing number, minus 140, that wasn't a line move. That was a pitching change adjustment. So again, keep that in mind as you're looking at the odds screen to look for some of those moves. I was surprised by the move to see Trevor Bauer go from a short dog to a clear favorite on Wednesday in the Astros-Indians series. Surprised to see it because there's not a whole lot of faith in Trevor Bauer out there in the investment market. But I've talked about it. I think Bauer's stuff has looked excellent so far this season. Gave up a couple of two-run dingers in that start on Wednesday. The Brian McCann home run was something. That was a first-pitch two-seamer down and away. Caught maybe a little bit too much of the plate, but it was clearly on the outer half. McCann just dug it out and hit it to straightaway center field. Really impressive piece of hitting. I don't put that one on Bauer. The stuff has looked good, really good, in fact. I've been very impressed with it. Good life on the fastball, very explosive. Curveball's got better tilt. He's not spiking it as much this year. Maybe some people have taken notice. I don't know. Maybe that was a McCullers fade. Maybe that was buying the Indians. I'm not entirely sure, but that was a pretty interesting line move there. Also on Wednesday, James Paxton money came in for Seattle against Detroit. Lather, rinse, repeat, money coming in against Detroit. Money coming in against Detroit on Thursday here as well with Hisashi Iwakuma getting backed. If you listen to this very, very early, if you get to this right after the show, my favorite play for today is the Detroit Tigers because Hisashi Iwakuma has looked awful this season, simply awful. He's walked more guys than he struck out. The velocity's down once again. The command profile is down. He had a declining skill set last year. I have no idea why money would look to come in against Justin Verlander here to back Hisashi Iwakuma. It's a day game for Seattle playing out in the Eastern time zone. That's another problem for them. So if you listen to this very quickly and you can fire on a reasonable price with Justin Verlander and the Tigers, that is the side that I like for Thursday night. Now, for those of you that can't get in on that game, which certainly a possibility, there's a quick turnaround to that afternoon first pitch in Detroit. We've seen a Masahiro Tanaka move in his start here against the Boston Red Sox, and I'll pull this up as I'm talking to get the most updated line as I'm recording around 10:30 Eastern time. on Thursday morning. But Chris Sale is a guy that's been really, really, really good. And I don't want to take anything away from Chris Sale because he's obviously an elite starting pitcher. And getting out of Chicago has helped him. But this price is just too high to me. Tanaka's off to a slow start, but he's been better than the numbers have shown. I wrote about this in my picks and analysis piece. So if you want a little bit more of a deep dive, go and check that out. But I think there's some value tonight in taking a stab on the Yankees. It's not a great card for Thursday night from a, you know, from a late game standpoint. There's not a whole lot that I like in terms of looking to take a stab on a big underdog. The Yankees would be the one that I would look at just because there's some natural regression coming for Sale. I think there's some positive regression coming from Tanaka, who, you know, I always have concerns because he is working with a UCL that's a ticking time bomb, and he could need Tommy John. He's been pitching through a damaged UCL basically throughout his Yankees career. So when I start to see the walk rate go up, when I start to see the command go down, it kind of makes me wonder if the injury has popped up. But in looking at his data, the velocity looks fine. The zone percentage looks fine. Just some variance there, I think, some small sample size variance for Tanaka. So that's the closest thing I've got to a play tonight would be the Yankees taking that big underdog price at plus 160, plus 165. Those should still be out there throughout the day. Could see some moneyline parlay exposure on Sale because he's been so dominant. So I think that number should stick around where it is. Again, not a strong play when it's a plus 160. It's not really going to be. But again, this is a spot where you can play, you know, a half unit to win a little bit more than a, or little, win a little bit less than a unit, something like that. You don't have to go with the full unit price to try and pick up a nice plus money underdog winner. But that's the closest thing I've got to a play here for Thursday, aside from that Verlander play, because I think that's a really misguided line move to drive him down from minus 145 to minus 130. And again, we'll see how that one plays out. One other line move here for Thursday, Kendall Graveman money has come in on the Oakland right-hander against the Anaheim Angels and Ricky Nolasco. Probably strictly a fade of Nolasco. However, lots of press for Kendall Graveman here this season. There's been three pieces written at Fangraphs. He's been talked about on podcasts. Lots of tweets about him as well. Rates really well in the command metrics. I'm concerned because he doesn't miss enough bats. You know, I mean, when you look at Major League Baseball now, three true outcomes for a lot of hitters, lots of guys hitting for power. You got to miss bats. If you miss barrels and Graveman misses a lot of barrels, then maybe there's some success to be had there. The problem for me about backing Graveman in this one is it's his first start off the disabled list. Almost as a rule of thumb, I never back guys that are coming off the disabled list. Doesn't matter if it's an arm thing, a back thing, a leg thing. I don't care. There's too much variance there. There's too much uncertainty with a guy making his first start off the disabled list. So I can't fire on something like Graveman tonight. But I do understand the line move with the hype train that's surrounding him. And then also a fade of the Angels, which I agree with as well. All right, so in lieu of a sabermetric stat and a daily fantasy tip for today, I'm going to talk about some pitchers to look to back and some pitchers to look to fade. Now, a couple of things. One, we're starting to see moves on guys like this already. I talked about this on Monday's show, and I'll talk about it as we go throughout the season here. The high ERA, low XFIP line move and the low ERA, high XFIP line move are already happening. They will happen throughout the season. For me, I'm not blindly following those types of moves yet because the sample sizes simply aren't significant enough. We're talking about 3, 4, 5 start sample sizes with these pitchers. It's entirely possible that something's just wrong. You know, it's entirely possible that the high ERA and low XFIP has something to do with, you know, a lack of control, has something to do with, you know, bad command where balls just aren't leaving the ballpark, but they're getting hit hard. The sample sizes aren't really good enough for me as of yet. However, I'll talk about some of these guys because, you know, XFIP, Sierra, statistics like that are the best metrics we have in terms of predicting future performance. That's the big key. They don't predict past performance. They predict what's going to happen throughout the rest of the season in terms of where, you know, ERAs are going to wind up. They're predicting future performance. So that means if a guy's got a 3.00 XFIP, the idea is that the rest of the season, he will post a 3.00 ERA or somewhere around there. So if he's gotten shelled early on, he may wind up with a 3.75 ERA when it's all said and done, but he'll have that 3.00 ERA over the course of the remainder of the season. So that's a really important distinction that I want to bring up here on today's show. As far as some guys to back here, I've got a list of looks like five or six of them here. The first is Justin Verlander, who I talked about already. I'm not concerned with the recent two starts that Verlander's had. He faced the Indians, who hit him pretty well, and then the Twins. He walked six in that game. He created his own problems. I don't think that's a sustainable thing for him. I do think Justin Verlander, especially with the daily Detroit fade that we're seeing out there in the marketplace, is the guy that you want to back. I also do like Michael Fulmer, but Verlander a little bit more than that. So I mentioned him already in passing, but Zach Greinke, 24.8% strikeout percentage, 4.8% walk percentage, 20% K percentage minus BB percentage is really, really good. 2.93 ERA, 2.35 FIP, 2.98 XFIP, over a strikeout per inning, 3.10 Sierra. He looks like he's back to being Zach Greinke, and good for him for that. And one of the things I talked about in that Stealing Signs podcast, one of the things that Stevie brought up, I thought was a really excellent point, is that Greinke last year, you know, went from throwing to a couple of good Dodgers catchers to a really bad Arizona catcher. Now he's got Jeff Mathis. All five of his starts coming with Jeff Mathis, who rates very, very well in the framing metrics and as a defensive catcher. Diamondbacks are a good defensive team overall. I'm buying into Zach Greinke. I think Zach Greinke can have a really strong season here for the Diamondbacks. I like the Diamondbacks coming into the year anyway, but if Greinke's going to be this front-of-the-line starter that he's been so far, I think that's a team and a pitcher that you can back with a lot of success here. Hopefully the numbers aren't too out of control, but Greinke looks really good here at the start of the season. Tanner Roark, I've talked about him a lot already, a guy that had five classified pitches rate above average per pitch FX last year. Looks good. You know, a low FIP, 347 FIP, 365 ERA, walk percentage below 5%, induces a lot of weak contact. He's got great command. Doesn't get the accolades that Scherzer and Strasburg get. So you can probably get some decent prices on Tanner Roark. I think you can win a lot of money this year laying the minus 140, minus 150 on him, because he just doesn't have that overpowering arsenal that gets respect in the betting market. And he's just a really solid starter and a guy that you can back with some success here this season. We'll stay in the National League East. In fact, several of these guys coming from the National League East today. How about Dan Straley? So Dan Straley, a guy who struck out 14 in his last start against San Diego, huge increase in his chase rate. It's up from 30% to 37.5%, and his zone contact percentage is about the same. More first pitch strikes this year. This is a guy that had a swinging strike rate above 10% last season. I think league average was about 9%, 8.9%, something like that. So lots of swings and misses for Straley. He's a fly ball guy that can carry a low BABIP. Marlins have a very good outfield defense. The Marlins are a team that I'm starting to like more and more here, and a guy like Dan Straley, somebody that fits into that narrative for me. I'm buying in. I think he misses enough bats, carry that low BABIP. He'll give up some home runs, but Marlins Park is a pretty good pitcher's park there. Dan Straley is a guy that I really like. I'd look to back him. The Marlins offense has been doing pretty well this season, and like I said, they're a good defensive team. I think Dan Straley is going to be a very, very undervalued commodity here over his next several starts and possibly throughout the rest of the season. Another one in the National League East, this one from Philadelphia, Jerod Eichhoff. Eichhoff is a guy that's got average fastball command, but he's got two plus secondaries. The slider and the curve may flash plus plus, to be honest with you. 25.3% strikeout percentage, over a strikeout per inning. He's got a 255 ERA with a 347 FIP, 397 XFIP, 359 Sierra. So, yeah, he's got the lower ERA and the higher XFIP, and maybe the market will give us some more value on him looking to fade that angle. But I like Eichhoff a lot. I think the stuff is good. I think he's learning how to pitch at the major league level. You know, he's improved since he came up from the minor leagues. I like him a lot. I think he's very underrated. That's a guy you can look to back with some success here for the Philadelphia Phillies. Another one is Julio Teheran. Now, Teheran pitched really well yesterday against the Mets, so pretty time relevant here, but the problem for him this season has been his walk rate. Last year, he really cut back the walk rate, got back to inducing a lot of weak contact. There were fewer balls in the middle of the plate. I think those were sustainable trends for him last year. I'm not really concerned that he's off to a slow start so far this season. I think that's a guy, if you want to look to back the Braves and the Braves offense, particularly Freddie Freeman, looks pretty decent this year. I think that's a guy that you can look to back with some success is Julio Teheran. All right, now let's look at the other side of the coin here. Some guys to fade. I've got six of them listed here. The first one is Ervin Santana. And Ervin Santana's stuff has looked excellent. When I watched him against the Indians last week, very, very impressive. He looked good. The stuff had great life. Lots of movement to it. But this is simple regression here. A 129 BABIP against 99% strand rate. He's got a 0.77 ERA with a 306 FIP because of the low walk rate, 397 xFIP, 404 Sierra. Not a guy that's going to post a really high home run to fly ball rate at this stage of his career, but regression is coming. You can't carry a 129 BABIP and a 99% strand rate. It's just not going to be a thing. Now, the question for Santana is, does the regression come gradually where he gives up, you know, four, five earned over five, six innings over a sustained period of time? Or does he just go out there, get his ass kicked, give up nine runs in an inning in a third? You know, that's going to normalize all of his numbers right away. So that's the thing that you kind of want to pinpoint there with Santana. So basically, if it comes in one really bad start, that may be it. He might have gotten it out of his system. If you see it start to come gradually, which I think is the way that it's going to go, because I talked about the Twins and some of their defensive regression as it is, I think it comes gradually for Santana. Maybe you don't play against the Twins, but you can play some team total overs against Santana, or if the price is right, certainly look to go against the Twins. But regression definitely coming for him. How about Cole Hamels? Interesting start to the season for Cole Hamels. 277 ERA, which is great, obviously. 86 FIP, 503 xFIP, a 13.5% strikeout percentage. Very low chase rate for him. Doesn't have a feel for the changeup. Getting very lucky with sequencing with balls in play right now. Swinging strike percentage down to 7.9%. This is a guy that every season throughout his career has posted a double-digit swinging strike rate. And this year it's below 8%. That's not good. I think that there may be something more to this. We could be talking about some sort of injury situation for Cole Hamels. But he's going to start to see some regression here in a pretty big way. And I think it could be really, really ugly for him. Robert Selman, a guy I mentioned already who pitched yesterday, declining velocity throughout that start. Basically in the middle of that start, he got down to about 89, 90 miles per hour. That's not good. You know, you'll see guys have trouble sustaining velocity a little bit. You know, maybe they start 92, 93 and close 91, 92, something like that. But for Selman, it was dropping quickly. And that's a bad, bad sign. That's a sign of an arm injury. And not only that, but when you look at all the circumstances surrounding the Mets, Jacob DeGrom was shut down last year. Zach Wheeler, Tommy John, Matt Harvey, Tommy John, Steven Matz is hurt every year. They've had other prospects that have gone through Tommy John. This looks like a systemic flaw for the New York Mets with how they're developing pitchers, how they're developing mechanics. Selman's probably going to be on the DL for a while here at some point soon. It's going to be a big-time shame to see that, but the red flags are certainly there. Another velocity red flag is Dylan Bundy. Now, Dylan Bundy is not missing a whole lot of bats. He's thrown a ton of strikes this year, which is why he's had success, but his velocity has gone down in each of his starts this season. A guy with an extensive medical history, very worried about that. You have to watch that situation there with Dylan Bundy. If you want to fade him, I certainly understand that. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe this is just a mechanical thing. Maybe he's losing his release point, not using his lower half, something like that. But anytime you talk about velocity decreases, those are big-time red flags for pitchers. And for Bundy right now, that's a big worry. A few others here to look at. I talked about Jake Arrieta already, his velocity decrease. High strikeout percentage for him, low walk percentage. However, there are some abnormalities in his plate discipline metrics. His first pitch strike rate is way down. His chase rate is down. His zone contact percentage right now, 80.9%. His career zone contact percentage, 86.6%. So I'm not buying the strikeout increase. I think that's a guy where we could see a lot of regression here in short order for him. Now, of course, the Cubs defense is good enough to stave off regression to an extent, but Jake Arrieta is going to start allowing more zone contact, and with decreased velocity, he's going to start giving up some very hard contact, home runs, extra base hits. I think Jake Arrieta is a guy that you can look to fade here in his coming starts as well. A handful of others, Jeremy Hellickson, that's a simple one. You look at the BABIP against, you look at the left on base percentage, ERA to xFIP discrepancy. Helixson's not striking anybody out. He struck out 10 of the 90 batters he's faced this year. The balls in play luck is going to go away. The Phillies are an average type of defensive team. Helixson's in line for some pretty rough outings here. Antonio Senzatella is a guy I've talked about for Colorado. Two-pitch pitcher. Yeah, as the book gets out on him, there are some concerns with that. And then one other one here is Kyle Freeland, who actually pitches in Arizona. I'll talk about this in a minute. He's carrying a 3.32 ERA, a 14.6% strikeout percentage, a 10.4% walk percentage. Now, I love the ground ball rate. It's why you can have success at Coors Field. But you are not carrying a 3.32 ERA with a 4.2% K percentage minus walk percentage metric. It's just not going to happen. So Kyle Freeland is a guy, I think the bottom falls out very, very soon for him. That'll be something you want to look for, and I think that it could very well happen on Friday night against Arizona. One tip for you, if you want to go to Fangraphs, sort by left on base percentage for starting pitchers. You'll see some regression candidates in there, especially guys that don't seem likely to carry a high left on base percentage, guys that don't miss a ton of bats, guys that have some pretty high exit velocities against. Baseball Savant has all that data now. Those are the guys you can look to pick on here at this stage of the game because they've had really good sequencing luck, and that tends to run out. If there's anybody you want to ask me about carrying a high left on base percentage, please feel free to reach out on Twitter at Skating Tripods. I'm happy to tell you about my thoughts on the sustainability of that metric. All right, so what am I looking for this weekend? Well, the Cubs go to Boston. Big series for both teams here. Cubs are one of the few National League teams that has enough offensive depth to field a pretty strong designated hitter when they play interleague play in the American League. I just talked about Jake Arrieta. He gets the start on Friday. He'll go up against Drew Pomerantz, John Lackey, Stephen Wright on Saturday, Kyle Hendricks, Eduardo Rodriguez on Sunday. That is Sunday night baseball, but no good situational spot coming out of that game. These are three starting pitchers I've had concerns with early on in the season, and now they all go face good American League lineups in a good hitter's park like Fenway Park. Big series for the Cubs in their starting rotation to see what Arrieta, Lackey, and Hendricks are able to do. Again, I think I would look to fade Jake Arrieta on Friday night. Drew Pomerantz may have some success here against this Cubs lineup. Outside of that, wait and see, price-dependent type things, of course. But I want to see how the Cubs' starting rotation looks in this series. Pittsburgh and Miami, interesting little series here. As I mentioned, the Marlins, a team gaining a lot of steam in my mind. Jameson Taillon, Adam Conley on Friday, Ivan Nova, Dan Straley on Saturday, Chad Kuhl, Tom Kohler on Sunday. Pretty big defensive edge in this series for the Marlins. The Pirates, not a great defensive outfield now with Starling Marte out with the PED suspension. Pirates are moving a lot of guys in and out. It almost seems like they're guessing and checking on the fly with what they've gotten. Guys like Adam Frazier, Jose Osuna, the new guy, the African player that came up, Gift Ngope, I believe his name is, got his first Major League hit. Kudos to him for that. Really great story. First Major League Baseball player actually from the continent of Africa, so definitely rooting for him to make some history there. But the Pirates, just different lineups every day. None of them are particularly strong. Their lineup against Brett Anderson in the first game there against the Cubs with like Jordy Mercer leading off and just ugly. And Adam Conley throws left-handed. Could be a tough spot for them on Friday night. The Pirates are just a mess right now. I see no reason to back them in basically any situation at this point. They're just not good. And Miami, a team on the rise for me. Now, that being said, Miami coming back after a long 8-game road trip to Seattle, to San Diego, to Philadelphia. They were in Philadelphia. They had to deal with the NFL draft, so they were staying in Wilmington, Delaware. Miami could be a little bit tired here. First game back after a long road trip generally tends to be a fade spot. But again, tough to back the Pirates, so we'll see how that series plays out. But Miami, again, a team, as I said, it's got some helium in my mind. I'm certainly taking them up a few notches. Colorado and Arizona battle for first place in the National League West. How about that? Kyle Freeland, Robbie Ray on Friday, Tyler Anderson, Zach Greinke on Saturday, Herman Marquez and Patrick Corbin on Sunday. Might just be German Marquez, but I don't know. Seems like it probably wouldn't be for a Latin player. Kyle Freeland regression coming on Friday, I think. I do like Arizona in that spot. Tyler Anderson's a guy that a lot of people believe in. I'm not really all that sold on him. He's not nearly as bad as he's been, but I'd be curious to see that price with Zach Greinke on Saturday because, like I said, I think Zach Greinke is a guy that has some upside, has some ceiling. I think he's pitched really well this year, and I think there are some sustainable things there, especially with some of the defensive gains with a guy like Jeff Mathis. But an interesting series there to be sure, especially because, as I said, it's a battle for first place. One other series to look at here, Seattle and Cleveland. I guess this is a good spot for the Indians to bank some wins. Ariel Miranda and Carlos Carrasco on Friday. Giovanni Gallardo, Danny Salazar Saturday. Chase DeJong and Josh Tomlin coming up on Sunday. Rain in the forecast for all three of these games, so we'll see what sorts of delays we get. What's tricky about this series for Seattle, three different start times. Now, they have been in Detroit, have gotten accustomed to Eastern time a little bit, but 7:10, 4:10, 1:10, the start times here. That's tough for a West Coast team coming east. I think that can be a problem for them. And again, like I said, rain could be a pretty big factor here in this series this weekend. Maybe we see some delays early in games, stuff like that. But they'll do everything they can to get these in because it's hard to reschedule Seattle-Cleveland matchups. So, again, good spot for the Indians. Tomlin looked a little bit better in his start against Houston the other night. This could be a sweep for Cleveland, honestly, with the injury problems that Seattle's got. You know, Kyle Seager is banged up. Mitch Haniger on the DL now. Seattle's just not – they're not really a whole lot of cohesion with this Seattle team. The Indians avoid James Paxton, which is big for them. They've got some matchup advantages here. So Indians to win the series certainly, I think, makes some sense. If you've got a book that offers a sweep prop, I think there's a little bit of value in that because they will be a clear favorite in all three of these games here this weekend. So again, coming up on Monday, another edition of the Bettors Box, also the Monday Mailbag, and then hopefully Tuesday, Keeneland Dan from Fat Bald Guy Racing to talk Kentucky Derby. So that'll do it for me. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.